Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The United States and its orbit of vassal states are the coalition against peace. From Ukraine to Gaza, it is the Biden administration that is against most of the world. An historic wind is blowing against the West. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. In Rome, we have Ramzi Baroud. He is a Palestinian author and journalist. In Beirut, we cross to Alan Alamedine. He is a coordinator for the Palestinian One Democratic State Initiative in Lebanon. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Ramzi, let me go to you first here. I mean, we're in the afterglow of the United States for the third time rejecting a ceasefire at the United Nations Security Council. Quite interestingly, in a man I usually don't quote on this program, if I do quote it, it's very disparagingly, is Joseph Borrell, who is what the EU High Commissioner for Foreign Policy. And he said in a recent venue that there is a historic wind blowing against the West. His words and the rejection of the United States, almost singularly alone in the world against a ceasefire. Put the two together for me.
So Borrell knows what he's talking about, Peter. I mean, this is a man who kind of assigns himself to this kind of hyped understanding of the world. You know, he referred once to Europe as a jungle and as a garden, and the rest of the world is a jungle that's fine to it. So he thinks in philosophical terms, and he knows, and he's correct, that in fact the United States has deprived itself, but also its Western allies and its allies anywhere in the world, from any kind of legitimacy to international law, to conflict resolution. I mean, the fact that Linda Greenfield would veto for a third time, not vetoing any sort of political decision that could be jeopardizing the well-being of Israel, but rather she is vetoing an immediate humanitarian ceasefire to stave off an actual famine. Children are dying from hunger in northern Gaza, and people are dying in their thousands in the Gaza Strip. Yet the United States still found that objectionable. So how do you justify that based on international law? How do you justify that based on political expediency or necessity? There is no moral, legal, ethical, or political justification to the behavior of the United States. As the U.S. legitimacy sinks, its allies, Borrell, and all of the rest are going to sink as well.
That's definitely true. The UK is mentioning the possibility of limiting some parts to the Israeli military because they see the historical wind blowing against them. You know, Lionel, you know, Joe Biden, you know, even on his best days is a bit confused, and I'm being generous here. It's been released to the media that he has some quite disparaging things to say about the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, words I can't pronounce on this program, but you could well imagine. The most powerful man in the world is being pulled around by the nose by the Israeli prime minister. And only thing that Biden can do is swear. Lionel.
I would like, if I could, to call my segment, The Natives Are Clueless or View from the Fishbowl, because I represent to you what is happening, what I see here in my country. And I don't want to speak for the West, but I'll speak for American media. My first question that I have to ask everybody, and you gentlemen perhaps maybe can help me with this, why do we use the term ceasefire? Americans believe that somehow Hamas is in this, that there's this battle going on, and that there's this firing that Israel will say, we will stop firing when you, Hamas, retreat from your miles of tunnels. And I'm thinking to myself, there is no, it's unilateral. We don't need a ceasefire, one could argue. Just stop firing. It's like if I take you hostage and I negotiate a ceasefire, the police are going to say, we have it. No, it's you. You've taken this. So that's the first thing. The second problem we have is Americans and American media still don't understand the term genocide. We have to change this. They're thinking of railroad cars in Auschwitz, and that is true. But we also very quickly have to explain ICC versus ICJ. I'm still trying to explain to people what that means. We use the terms interchangeably. So again, from the fishbowl here, while you gentlemen live in a more rarefied world, I'm trying to explain the abecedarian rudiments of what's happening, basically acquainting my fellow Americans with reality.
Yeah, but Lionel, if I can go to our guest in Beirut, Alan, you know, I don't want to sound perverse or anything, but I think if they set up gas chambers in Gaza, it still wouldn't change the American administration's position. That's how pathetic and terrifying our time is right now. Go ahead, Alan, in Beirut.
Thank you for having me. I agree. I think it is indeed pathetic, and I think it's good to try and understand what are the powers in the U.S. that are actually benefiting from this situation? Because it's definitely not U.S. society that is benefiting from the genocide. One of the key events that can help us understand what's happening is when we look at AIPAC, which is the Israeli lobby in the U.S., they are spending tens of millions of dollars to literally buy U.S. representatives. So it's like the U.S. population are electing them, but then AIPAC is stealing them from the people who elected them to represent them. We can also see what's happening with the capitalist nature of the U.S., for example, in the armament industry that they call the defense industry, much like the IDF. The chief of Lockheed, which makes hundreds of billions of dollars, said in October 2023, don't call for an end to the aggression. Some problems can only be solved with weapons, and we are ready to deliver these weapons. On the other hand, U.S. society is definitely not benefiting from all this identitarian rhetoric that the Zionists are using. So for when Biden says the Jews are not safe in the U.S., he's sending a very bad message to U.S. Jews and about U.S. non-Jews. So really, the U.S. society needs to be freed from this capitalist.
Yeah, but, you know, Alan, it's really, I'm glad you got the identitarian issue. I think I'm glad you brought that up because, Ramsey, you know, we have the current American representative to the United Nations. I think on her first day, she was saying something like the U.N. has to investigate racism in America, which kind of surprised a lot of people, being the ambassador of the United Nations. But the United States is protecting one of the most racist societies in the world, Israel.
Absolutely. And I mean, all these contradictions maybe are obvious to you and to me and hopefully to an increasing number of Americans as well. But it still hasn't really registered with the ruling classes in the United States. I think it really all can be kind of brought down to this. On the very day that the American representative at the UN, at the Security Council, February 20, on that very day in which she was ordered to veto an Algerian resolution demanding an end, basically an end to the Israeli genocide in Gaza. And Lionel is correct. This is, I mean, Palestinians wouldn't fire back if the Israelis are not firing at them. So it's not really a ceasefire in a traditional war sort of sense. But on that very day, Biden has actually, and this is all over the news, has attended a fundraising party by a pro-Israel billionaire who is giving a lot of money to the Democratic Party. So this is what it really comes down to.
Ramsey, we have to be clear. The same billionaires that you're making reference to, they give to Republicans and to Democrat because these same billionaires, they have only one issue. Israel, okay? That's what, and of course, you know, if you don't go along with it, you get primaried in both parties, okay? That's how dangerous a situation, pathetic it is. You know, Lionel, it's interesting that we've heard the term two-state solution. I mean, all of us on this panel and much of our audience have heard this all of their lives, okay? But isn't it interesting, Lionel, there are no states stopping the genocide. You know, they talk, you know, two-state solution is the ideal, which I think is a fraud at this point, but no state. And we can't even say Yemen because the Houthis don't control all of Yemen. But the international state system is not doing anything to stop a genocide, which due to the conventions after the Second World War, it was incumbent upon them to do that. Lionel.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of things here. If I could add another development that I'm hearing, because if it were not for the internet, if it were not for new platforms with new voices, and by the way, gentlemen, people that I'm listening to who before October the 7th, I, I would have not spent a moment listening to them. Now I'm finding unique solidarity. I came upon Vanessa Redgrave in 1978 accepting the Academy Award, and she made a statement about Zionism and Israel. Okay. And I listened to this, and you would have thought, and I remember at the time, that this was the most, talking about Palestine, Yasser Arafat, the PLO, what kind of a demented monster.
Lionel, we betray our age. I remember it too. Keep going.
And Patty Chayefsky, who wrote from Network, came right afterwards and excoriated her for that. Here's the interesting part. What she said is mild to what we're hearing on a regular basis. And very quickly, I'm hearing something which is I have not heard before. American Jews coming forth and demarcating and separating the notion of Judaism, faith, Americanism, but Zionism. For the first time, I have never heard people trying to demarcate the fact that the acceptance of either Zionism or Israel do not necessarily conflict the other. It's like non-overlapping magisteria.
Let me get Alan in here before we go to the break. Sure. But that's such an excellent point here. You know, Alan, you know, Lionel is talking about something that I grew up with, and we were all taught to be Zionists. That was, but we weren't aware of really what that meant. Okay, and now when you get to a point where genocide is being committed, you have to stand up and say what you believe and what you don't believe. And you know, Joe Biden says he's a Zionist. Okay, so he supports this. See, this is the barriers that we're encountering in this conversation. Go ahead, Alan, before we go to the break.
Well, I think that just using the expression two-state solution implies that it's a solution. It's actually not. The state of Israel is a state that defines itself as a state exclusive to Jews. That is the original problem. And it can only lead to ethnic cleansing and genocide as we are seeing today. So all states in the world who say they support the two-state non-solution are really supporting...
All right, Alan, hold that thought. Unfortunately, we have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Okay, let's go back to Ramsey in Rome. You know, the number of falsehoods and the level of deception is really quite incredible coming from the elites and from their minions in the media here. Number one, the American ambassador to the United Nations, she said the United States voted against the Algerian resolution because of the ongoing hostage talks and plans, which is patently untrue. I mean, you can watch international media and the Qataris saying, no, it's not going anywhere. It looks bad, okay? I mean, that was on a false premise. And again, we mentioned on the first part of the program the two-state solution. I mean, here you have American officials, Tony Blinken, who comes out like an undertaker every time he speaks to the public, you know, saying the United States believes in the two-state solution. And in the same news cycle, Netanyahu said, I spent my whole life destroying that possibility. And then you have the Israeli government or the Knesset going and having a vote, which is meaningless on an international level, against any possibility of a two-state solution. But nobody in Western media shows how the two conflict. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, let's remember that in after the American invasion of Iraq, when W. Bush was blamed for having a plan for war, we were told, but not having a plan for peace, he came up with the roadmap to peace. And we know how that worked out in Palestine and Israel. And I think this is something very similar to it. They are trying to create a distraction from the war by creating this platform in which we are supposed to engage and to talk about the possibilities and what kind of state. Is it going to be a state, a full-fledged state, or it's going to be disarmed? And yet, a lot of people said they are engaging in a conversation. And you have 2.3 million people who are starving to death. So I think the discussion about two states is not really about a solution, has nothing to do with peace, and it has everything to do is to basically have us look somewhere else as Israel finishes its genocide against the Palestinians. Many people are engaged in that, whether willingly or unwittingly, but it's an extremely dangerous political ploy that is really aimed, at, again, just at creating a distraction.
You know, Lionel, it's very, as we are speaking right now, the Israeli government has made it clear that it will go into Rafah, and the Israeli government wants some kind of plan for protection of civilians. I have no idea where they're, what they're talking about. Where are they supposed to go? And again, they're telegraphing what they're going to do. And the only thing the American administration can do and its Western allies is wag their finger. You better not do that. Well, considering everything that they've done to date, why wouldn't they stop? Lionel.
Peter, I'm a lawyer by training, and one of the things we do in contract law is a notion of severability. When something is a part of a contract doesn't work, you don't throw the whole thing out. You just pull that out, and you sever the part of it that doesn't work. There are many, many moving parts to this issue here. And the other day, Prince William said, I believe, something rather rational. He said something about we have to stop the killing in Gaza. The reaction from the Western media was, what kind of heretical nonsense is this? So I'd like to say, again, from the fishbowl where I am, to say, before we talk about two state, one state, whatever, let's talk about, do we all agree that it's a good idea to stop the killing of innocent people, men, women, children? Not to abandon the fight against terrorism or Hamas. No. But just right now, let's start with that. And a friend of mine, very astute, actually said, can we do that? And I said, yes. It's like an all or nothing idea. Yeah. Again, it goes back, gentlemen, to the idea that people don't really understand what this is because they imagine this a war with sides and militaries in uniforms and take the high ground, when in fact, this is an incursion. This is something that really doesn't have a definition. It's a state against either a people, an idea. It does not have any historical antecedent. So we have to explain very simply that stopping killing, just human, as humans to humans, this in no way abnegates the responsibility that people have to stop terrorism and senseless slaughter.
Yeah, but I mean, that approach there, if I can go to Alan in Beirut, we have to kill as many as possible so we can stop killing? I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, definitely. I think that armed action in itself is a tool that must be used for a political project. It's either the Zionist political project, a project of genocide, or the Palestinian project, which is a project for a secular and democratic Palestinian state. So we're not against the use of force in itself. We are against the concept of a racist project and for its antithesis, a democratic project.
Well, the only solution, Ramsey, you're the ultimate expert on this here, is that historically we've already come to the solution, and it's a one-state solution where everyone must be treated equally. Lionel and I can say that as Americans, you know, I remember I was very little, but I do remember Jim Crow. Okay, and you have to come to terms where everyone has to be equal under the law. Now, Ramsey, we know that because of Zionism, that is impossible. But that's why we need to get rid of Zionism.
That's exactly right. I think when we talk about one state versus two states, it appears as if we are discussing technical issues. What is doable? What is politically plausible and achievable? But in actuality, it really is not about solutions. It's about the reality that you have two groups of people, one that is empowered and armed and supported by the United States, one that is disempowered, marginalized, and is just basically serving the role of the victim for the last 75 years. In order for us to change this relationship, we need to examine the ideology that led to all of this mess in the first place. Jews, Christians, Muslims, Arabs lived in that land for a long, long time, and they were just fine. Zionism arrived late 19th century, early 20th century, created this ideological mess, this racism, this horrific killing campaign that is yet to stop throughout all of these years. We need to get rid of Zionism entirely in order for us to even start talking about the possibility of coexistence.
Lionel, what is in terms of the United States first, and then we'll go globally, how is this affecting the Biden presidency? Because, you know, globally, I think, you know, as things stand now, as we speak, this is the legacy of the Biden administration, a genocide. Okay. Now, you've been coming on every week and demonstrating to us Americans think very differently about that because you keep going back to the fishbowl. What is it in terms of his legacy now going into re-election?
That's the critical part, because up till now, the Democrats and Republicans have been two sides of the same coin. They have been in lockstep, and there has been absolutely no political repercussions whatsoever if he were to stray from this. The moment that the real Democrats, younger, the AOC brand, the Bernie Sanders group and contingents, the moment they get some type of a lockstep or a hold on this, and the moment it becomes a political issue, that's when it changes. But right now, both sides are identical. And for reasons I will never understand, this schizophrenia, we'll talk about Navalny, but we won't talk about Gonzalo Lira. We'll talk about Julian Assange, but not really. And how this is this suppression, by the way, and we allow the suppression of information to occur. The moment it stops, the moment somebody somewhere, whether it's Gavin Newsom or whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be, who says we have to separate ourselves from the other presumed nominee, Donald Trump, who is in lockstep, the moment that happens, that's when it changes.
Yeah, but and I can't wait for it, but let's not hold our breath at the same time.
No.
Alan, you're in Beirut. There's every indication, considering the amassment of Israeli forces on the Lebanese border, that there could be another attack on Lebanon. This is not the same as it was before, but how worried are you? Because you're in Beirut. You're within hitting the Israelis easily, and they've done it many times before, hit Beirut. Are the people in Lebanon worried that Netanyahu and his government will expand the war north?
I'm personally not afraid.
Okay.
I know that as long as Israel exists, we are in danger. So the amassment of troops is just something, it's an immediate danger, but the danger has always been there. Unfortunately, Lebanese society is not really ready to face this threat because we are also suffering from our own regime, which is also a colonial instituted regime, which also politicizes identity. So unfortunately, we are fragmented. We are military capable of facing Israel. We have, and we've succeeded in 2000 and 2006, but we need a political program also in Lebanon that unites us in face of all dangers.
You know, every Lebanese person that comes on my program says the same thing, you know, we're not afraid, okay? It's so good to hear that, okay? Because...
we're not.
Yeah, experience teaches you a lot. Ramzi, we have about 1 minute and 30 seconds left. I've been doing this with Lionel now for week after week after week. Can you give us any hope? Please, please, give us some hope.
Well, the hope comes from the people. Nearly 140 days of constant Israeli war. The Palestinian people are not giving up. They have every intention and every right to continue resisting as they have done for many, many years. In fact, this panic, this American racism, these vetoes are all because the Palestinians wouldn't give up. As long as the Palestinians do not give up and they won't, there will always be hope for a free Palestine.
But isn't it really interesting you said, because, you know, as an American, you know, the whole issue of race is constantly being brought up. It comes from the left almost all the time here. But, you know, it one thing that I would like to see happen is that if you want to talk about race, talk about it in a real sense. Because if everything is racist, then nothing is. But if, you know, then you have to examine the foreign policy. And, you know, I've said, you know, so many for years now, if Americans only knew what their foreign policy was supporting, it's supporting a horrific regime in Israel. Go ahead, finish up for us, Ramzi.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the issue of racism has been reduced for as a subject of political manipulation, and it has succeeded for political reasons, especially the Democrats in the U.S. and so forth. But the actual racism that exists of people being killed because they are the wrong ethnicity, the wrong race, the wrong skin color, the wrong religion, It's happening right now, and people are dying in their thousands.
It's not a political slogan. It is something that is very real, and it can be addressed and should be addressed, and it's all incumbent upon the U.S. government to do that, and I don't have a whole lot of hope. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Rome, in New York, and in Beirut, and of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.